When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on tonight's episode, we're going to check in on two of the hottest hitters in the Orioles minor league farm system and two of their top prospects in Kobe Mayo and Samuel Basayo. We're going to dive into their performances a little bit later on. But first, Orioles on the Verge is brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. And as a reminder, we are going to be at Checker Spot Brewing this Saturday for our live show beginning at 2 p.m. If you have tickets to the Orioles game, stop by ahead of time. It's the perfect time to check in ahead of time, have a beer, watch our show, go to the game. If you don't have tickets to the game, stop by and hang out after the show, because Checker Spot's going to have the game on. It's a good place to catch all the action. We'll have a viewing party there. So whether you're a fan of the Orioles or you're going to be the guest splasher on Friday night and you need time to unwind and you want to talk about the Orioles a little bit, perfect time to stop by and check out the live show Saturday at 2 p.m. And as an added bonus, if you are a member of our Patreon community, check the Discord chat sometime between now and Saturday. There's going to be a password posted in there. Mention that password when you go up to the bar and you will get a free beer. So again, the perfect way to unwind from being the ceremonial guest splasher on Friday night. Just saying. So you'll want to check that out. Orioles on the Verge, live at Checker Spot Brewing Company. Checker Spot is a short distance from Camden Yards, so look forward to that. Now, we'll get into the main topic of this episode, which is that two of the Orioles' top prospects have been hitting the ball pretty well of late. Kobe Mayo with the Norfolk Tides homered in four consecutive games over the past week. Samuel Basayo, meanwhile, after a little bit of a rocky start to this season, has started to heat up and came back from a scary situation where he's hit on the wrist on Thursday to play against Erie in Bowie series over the weekend and performed pretty well. So far, over his last six games, Basayo has homered four times, driven in 10, posted a 1260 OPS, and the walks have started to creep up a little bit. Still down from where they were last year, but he has started to show more patience at the plate. Meanwhile, Mayo has a case as maybe one of the best hitters in all of minor league baseball, not just the Orioles farm system. So far, hitting 309 with a 1,003 OPS, 11 homers, 32 RBIs, and 154 plate appearances. So I'll start with Bob here. And let's talk about Mayo first, because now that Jackson Holliday has been up and been sent down, it seems like Mayo is the prospect that Orioles fans are clamoring for. And for good reason. He's hitting the ball as well, if not better, than he ever has at any point in his minor league career. What else do you think he has to show at Norfolk before we see him in the majors?
Kobe Mayo, man, just nothing is holding him back. He's major league ready. Like, he should be up tomorrow. Improve this lineup. Ramon Arias, I know you went 2-for-3 with the hit by pitch on Sunday, but you got to go, bud, because Kobe Mayo is just doing things in the minor leagues as I wait for my crappy computer to go back over to the Kobe Mayo tab that I had open. I know he's got an 1100 OPS, 175 WRC plus since April 20th. He's been on a real heater since then, batting 310, 1109 OPS, as I was saying. ISO at 414. I mean, just insane. Striking out a lot, but like we've always talked about with Couser, with his strikeout rate, who cares when you're doing damage like that? Literally, who cares? He's almost walking 11% since April 20th, so the walk rate is coming back up. I do think the defense is improving as the year goes on. I never thought it was all as bad as what some people might have assumed based on just the errors. What can he do? I mean, if it wasn't for the dozens of just notable prospects that the Orioles have brought up recently, I feel like Orioles fans would just be like losing their minds at what we have here. And we still have him. It's just a little more under the radar. It feels like no matter what he does, it's a little bit under the radar, but it's not going to be under the radar in a month or so when he's up in the major leagues and just crushing balls into oblivion over Baltimore.
Yeah, there's like one Brewers fan that stays in our mentions every time we post a Kobe Mayo home run clip. He's like, we could have had this instead of Joey Ortiz. Like, no, okay, first of all, the Joey Ortiz disrespect stops there. He's playing well for you, very well for you. But all right, here's my thing with Kobe Mayo. And I've said before how with these prospects, I can be a lot more patient now because the major league team is so good. But I'm going to assume Bob did not read this article because it came out on Friday. But
right.
Zach, did you read the article on Fangraphs by Dan Zimborski? The Orioles are running out of lineup spots.
Yes, I did.
Gotcha. Well, I pulled this up. I didn't see like any conversation about this article, which doesn't shock me because I know Orioles fans and the weird relationship they have with Fangraphs, but it's still my go-to site. So I'm going to pull this article up and I'd like to discuss it a little bit. Dan Zimborski wrote a fantastic piece highlighting, putting the young core of the Orioles lineup into historical perspective. And it is absolutely amazing. Okay. And he talks about, you know, Adley Rutschman winning runner-up for Rookie of the Year. Then Gunnar Henderson wins it the next year. And then Jackson Holliday was a favorite entering this year. Comes up, has a clunker, gets sent back down to AAA. But, oh, look, Colton Couser is now one of the favorites to win AL Rookie of the Year. And no one is talking about Jordan Westberg, who at the time of this writing, I'm looking at his article here, when this article was published on Friday, he had an 890 OPS. I know he had a great weekend, so it's probably even higher now. But he's looking at this. It says, even with Holliday falling flat in his first 10 games in the majors, something I, Dan Zimborski, expect him to rectify in the not too distant future, the Orioles are leading the league in WAR from players younger than the traditional peak age of 27. So stacked up against every other team in Major League Baseball, team positional player WAR for players 26 and under, the Orioles are at 5.2. which is 1.1 WAR higher than number two on that list from the New York Yankees. And that list consists of Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Jordan Westberg, Colton Couser, Jackson Holliday. And then he looks at the projections that include Hessen Kerstad, Kobe Mayo, and Connor Norby. Okay. And he uses his model to project out the rest of season projected WAR for that group would be 21.7 WAR for Henderson, Rutschman, Westberg, Couser, Holliday, Norby, Kerstad, all of them, which would rank in, he used post-World War II era, 1969 to 2024, since, you know, back in the many moons ago, there was no service time clock, 18-year-olds getting called up to the major leagues. This Orioles young core and their projected, you know, 21.7 WAR for the remainder of the season would rank fifth all-time in baseball since 1969. Behind the 88 Reds with Barry Larkin and Eric Davis and Paul O'Neill, the 87 Pirates with Barry Bonds, the 2016 Cubs, the 74 Reds with Johnny Bench, Dave Concepcion, and George Foster. Like, These are historic numbers that this young Orioles core is putting up right now and projects. Then he digs a little bit deeper and looks at just Kobe Mayo, Heston Kerstad, and Connor Norby, and posts their Zips rest of season projections. If they were to be called up to the majors right now, and you sim this out for the rest of the year, Kobe Mayo would project a 2.5 WAR, 20 home runs, 25 doubles. Yeah, a lot of strikeouts, but a 2.5 WAR. Kerstad at 1.6 WAR with 18 home runs. Norby, 1.5 WAR, 17 home runs, 22 doubles. So his model would say that Kobe Mayo, if you called him up right now, only hitting 243, but that's okay because almost 50 extra base hits, 2.5 WAR, well above average. All three, he's saying, project as league average or better if they started in the majors right now. When I pull up Ramon Arias page, I'm going to do it. You all know the numbers, but we need to say it out loud. Yes, we need to say it out loud here. Also, I don't care that he won a gold glove. I really, good for him. Put it on your mantle and show everybody. Show the Jehovah's Witness that knocks on your door. Be like, look, I won that. Now go away. I would be doing that. But I don't care that he won a gold glove. He has a 1.9% walk rate. He's hitting 196. He has a WRC plus of 50, and he's worth negative 0.2 WAR so far. I totally get, I can understand keeping Austin Hayes around, right? I get it. I'm fine with that. I get why you feel comfortable having Ramon Arias on the roster as well. You can play multiple positions. You probably do trust. In fact, I would imagine the Orioles, it's not crazy to say the Orioles probably do trust Ramon Arias' defense better than Mayo's. But at what point is what Kobe Mayo brings to this team offensively going to outweigh the difference in defensive value from dropping from Ramon Arias to Kobe Mayo? And like Bob said, like, we're not talking about a terrible third baseman here. People want to paint him as this god-awful third baseman. He's not. Yeah, maybe the defense does take a hit, but what you're gaining in offense potentially, like, I've changed my tune, and I just think at this point, and I've seen some other like prospect evaluators out there in the Twitter sphere saying it's just a couple of days now. I forget his name, but whoever it was that writes for Baseball America now is like, he's got to come up in like the next couple of weeks.
JJ, I think.
Maybe. I forget who it was at this point. Like, it's, I'm changing my tune here, and I'm just like, what else does Kobe Mayo have to do? Like, that's a good question. Because I think all the data seems pretty clear, but again, it is that trust factor. I do get that. Like, but this kid, that Batman, that could really be a potentially special bat. If Kobe Mayo is in any other system, well, in how, not every system, but in how many other systems, if Kobe Mayo is your top prospect, are you waiting to build your franchise around him? Or are you waiting for him to reach the majors and then you hit go on getting out of your rebuild? Like, and the Orioles is just like, he's just another guy. He's just another prospect in this organization. But I've changed my tune. You've got to bring Kobe Mayo up, I think, soon, like real soon. I think he could be a pretty big difference maker here for this team.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's getting to the point where you have to figure out how you're going to fit Mayo into the lineup, because he brings right-handed power that, in terms of raw power, there's not an Orioles hitter who can match what Mayo does on the roster right now. There just isn't from the right side. The left side is a different story, but from the right side, no one can match Mayo's raw power. I think really what it's going to, you know, and this is the same for every Orioles prospect that has come up so far, there needs to be that runway where you feel like you're comfortable running him out for an extended period of time, see how he adjusts, and go from there. The Orioles thought that they had that runway with Jackson Holliday earlier this year, but they felt like at the end of that he had things he needed to work on, he was sent down. Now, if you look at some other players that have come up in recent years, you know, whether it's Adley Rutschman or Gunnar Henderson, there are situations where a little bit different. If Mayo does come up, he's going to be under a lot of pressure because this Orioles team is winning. And if he takes the roster spot of a veteran like Ramon Arias, who's DFA'd, and it's not an IL situation, but he's DFA'd, that adds to the pressure. But do I think Mayo can handle it? Absolutely, I think he can. So they got to look to bring him up sooner rather than later.
And go ahead, Nick.
Jorge Mateo, like, he's playing well right now. I think I don't want people to fall into that trap that we fell into like first half last year, where I think I even made the comment, like, am I going to start drafting Jorge Mateo in like second half best ball drafts? Like, I might. I don't want to fall into that trap again, but like, all right, you get rid of Ramon Urias and you bring Kobe Mayo up to play third base. That's what he's going to play. You still got Mateo there. What if Mayo does come up and he does struggle and you have to send him back down like Holiday? There's nothing wrong with that. It very well could happen. That's okay. But you still got Jorge Mateo there who can play second base. You can slide Westberg back over. He can play third base. If Ramon Urias is gone, you got to send Mayo back down. You put Westberg at third. You have Mateo playing more second base. You can find somebody to fill that void for a couple of weeks there until Holiday. Maybe by that point, Holiday's ready to come back up. And you plug Holiday back in at second base, slide Westberg over to third base. I think because of that, I mean, if you need to, worst comes to worst, Nick Maton's about done with his rehab, his minor league rehab. Plug him up for a couple of days. I don't care. You got to bring him up at some point. Because Ramon Urias, like, thank you for your service. I respect what you've done, but like that Kobe Mayo doesn't give a damn about that wall out in left field. It was Baseball America who, if you look at his metrics this year, Kobe Mayo is putting up 80 grade power. The scale doesn't go any higher. Like, let's do it already.
Yeah. And you know, people said when Holiday was sent down, how long till he comes back? How long till he comes back? Do you think? To me, he ain't coming back before Kobe Mayo makes his major league debut and gets his shot to do what Holiday got a chance to do earlier in the year, a few weeks ago, obviously. I just think, you know, Mateo, like you're saying, I think we all bit into that April hype a little bit too much last year, but he does more things well than Urias. I think he's a better bench player, better fit for the current roster. Yeah, I'm going to start pounding the table if he's not up by this time next week, I think.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm of the mindset that Mateo is a perfectly fine role player who has settled into a role that is tailor-made for him, bounce around a little bit, come up, and hit against left-handed pitching. Otherwise, he's mostly on the bench and available as a late-inning defensive replacement or a pinch runner. I think that is a perfect role for him. I don't want to see him go anywhere anytime soon. So it is probably Urias who would become expendable at that point. But I'll move on now to Samuel Basayo. And Basayo has had kind of a tough start to the season on multiple levels. The elbow injury kept him from catching early on, and then his offensive performance through the first week or so was kind of middling. We weren't really seeing the power. Strikeouts were up. Walks were way down. But now all of a sudden we're starting to see the Samuel Basayo that we saw last year. If you look at Bowie series against Erie, Basayo appeared in four games last week, belted two home runs in that span. And big credit to him for coming back from a tough situation where he hit on the wrist by a pitch on Thursday night, visibly in a lot of pain. We weren't sure how soon we're going to see him back on the field after that. He comes back out the next night and goes 1-for-4 and then wraps up the series with a 2-for-5 performance on Sunday. So, Bob, I'll start with you here. Do you think that Bisaccia, and not to mention, by the way, he's back behind the plate catching again, do you think that he's turning a corner here where we're going to start to see the Samuel Bisaccia that we saw last year?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we mentioned it in that first episode we did after the season started, that, or at least I said that I think this is just, you know, early season struggle, quote unquote, a few games. And realistically, I almost feel like you can throw out the first 7 games of the season for him. I mean, obviously you literally cannot, but you know, he had a delayed spring training. He had a weird spring training. He didn't start playing the field until like the season actually started. You know, he starts first 7 games, 6-for-30, 200 batting average, only 1 extra base hit, a double, 0 walks, 11 strikeouts. So that's not good, obviously. Since then, he's gone on to hit .292 with an .887 OPS, .149 WRC+, .262 ISO, and where 11 strikeouts and 30 at-bats is a pretty high strikeout rate. His strikeout rate since then is 20.3, much more in line with what we would expect from our boy Sammy B. Walk rate, only 4.3% since then. I think, you know, he's an aggressive guy. I think his walk rate got better as last year went on, and maybe that will be the case here as well. But there's a weird thing going on with this organization as a whole, especially at the major league level when it comes to the walk rate that we would expect from certain guys. So, and I have a theory on that in the Discord that it seems intentional, but who knows what that is, because obviously it hasn't affected the offense. It's one of the best offenses in baseball despite that. But back to Samuel Bisaccia, I think basically I'm almost treating the first week or so of the season as like a continuation of his spring training, just getting loose, getting back in the swing of things. And now that he's up and running and back to full speed here, catching, playing first base, he looks every bit the part I would expect to look, at least, you know, on the past week, again, just based on highlights and box scores. But yeah, I'm excited to see him continue to grow throughout the season like he did last year and how high he can go.
Yeah, I mean, it's just these last two series, he's got a WRC plus of 190. He's settling in pretty well. And I do agree that he's a 19-year-old kid who experienced his first major injury, and that messed up his spring training. It interrupted his offseason. He's also trying to settle into AA, where he only had, what, a week, 2 weeks in AA to close out the year. If he's not the youngest player in the league, he's like the second or third youngest player in the league. I don't know off the top of my head exactly where he ranks there, but how many other 19-year-olds are in AA right now? He's back behind the plate, and I just think it's funny that it's kind of coincided, the him getting back behind the plate and his offensive output has started to like all happen around the same time. Like, the kid just wanted to get back behind the plate and be normal again, I guess. Like you mentioned the numbers there. He's striking out less. He's walking more. I don't think it's a homer take, or like, we get this comment all the time, viewing Bisaccia through orange colored glasses. I don't think it's that to say that we've only seen the tip of the iceberg with Samuel Bisaccia. He doesn't turn 20 until mid-August. So he's going to play, what, like 80%, 85% of the season as a 19-year-old in AA who could very realistically end the year in AAA. And he has not even developed into his grown man body yet. He's still a teenager. And I think defensively, like, obviously we haven't been able to watch him much this year at catcher because that just started. But last year he showed off the strong arm. He steals strikes. He's an above average defender behind the plate. And I think even if he does get bigger, he's going to be good enough. He's a good enough defender to be Adley's backup while primarily playing first base DH, which, like, by the way, like, fantastic reaction time and reflexes he showed over the weekend over at first base. I think that was Saturday's game. He made a great play. It was so fast the camera couldn't even catch up. But I think he's primed for a pretty special season down there in Bowie once he fully settles in, which I think he's starting to do already. And it's the first week of May.
I'll throw out this question about Bisaccia and we can wrap here on this, which is, you know, a player starts to perform well, the question comes up, when are they going to get promoted? And I've talked on a recent episode about how there actually is a little bit of a logjam at catching if you look in the Orioles farm system, but a prospect like Passaio is not going to be blocked from Norfolk. So keeping in mind that he's starting to heat up the plate, but at the same time has not had a lot of innings at catcher this season, what seems like a realistic time frame for him getting to Norfolk, provided the performance down the, you know, throughout the next couple of months warrants a promotion?
I'm going to say post All-Star break. So what, mid-July for the minor leagues, or early to mid-July? I could see that being like the earliest.
Yeah. I mean, you can, you got David Benuelos, who somehow remains in this organization, even through all the roster movement. Michael Perez is there in Norfolk as well. I feel like you can probably get rid of one of those guys. And even if like Maverick Hanley is your taxi squad guy, or you get rid of one of Benuelos or Perez, the other becomes your taxi squad guy. And then you've got Hanley and Basayo. I'm trying to figure out if there's a way, because Ardue is pretty having a really good year too, but maybe you see more in his bat and you decide to keep him in Double A, let him hang out in Double A for a little while longer. But I imagine there is a way that you can get Basayo and Ardue up at Triple A by the end of the year. And then both of these guys, right, maybe eventually Maverick Hanley becomes your taxi squad guy. And now you've got two fantastic catchers, one an offensive-minded catcher, and then one of your top defensive-minded catchers in the system in AAA, which is another great problem that this organization is going to have. But
we'll wrap up now with the final segment of our episode, where we like to shout out players outside of the top 30 portion of our top 50 prospects list, whether it's been something that they've done lately, like a good game, a good week, or maybe there's something in their stat line that we just want to point out. And we always pick a hitter and a pitcher for this segment. I'm going to start with Nick, who has a hitter that we shouted out a lot a couple of years ago when he's in the Dominican Summer League, and a pitcher from last year's draft class who's off to a very good start this season.
Yeah, I'm going to go the hitter first, Aaron Estrada, 19-year-old switch hitting infielder who's listed at just 5'8". So I think he's from Venezuela as well. So is he like our little Jose Altuve that we've got over here? Except we paid Estrada, I think, a lot more money. But Delmarva had a really solid week, actually, which is great to see. Thomas Sosa continues to just hit doubles and steal bases. He had 8 stolen bases last week alone. But Aaron Estrada also stood out. He had, let me see his numbers here, month of April, he had a 155 average, a 189 on base percentage, 2 walks to 18 strikeouts, which is odd because in the DSL and the FCL over the last 2 years, he had more walks than strikeouts. But clearly, like, as a reminder, making that jump from the FCL to low A is incredibly difficult now. Well, in the month of May, 5 games, so, but he's hitting .333 with a 500 on base percentage, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts, and he's 4-for-4. In stolen bases. I really hope that this is him kind of settling in and turning a corner, because he's like the next Ben Cosme, Enrique Bradfield. Not that he has their talents, but he's a unique player, I think, in this organization, that, and the organization is clearly pretty high on him. So I'm intrigued to see like how they deploy these types of players, because they're not your prototypical power hitting slugger. But my pitcher, I'm going to go Zach Fruit. Like, I didn't know earlier today if he was going to crack our top 50 or not. I don't think he did. He should be in our top 50. He is quickly becoming one of my favorite pitchers to watch in this system. Physically, he's Kyle Bradish 2.0. He's actually an inch taller and 3 pounds lighter than Bradish based on their player pages right now. Their delivery is pretty similar as well. Coming out of the draft, physically, Kyle Bradish, also the stuff-wise, Mason McCray comped him to Mason Miller. So I know everybody's like, we need Mason Miller. We need Mason Miller. I'm like, this is like the, I want McDonald's. And your mom says, we got McDonald's at home. We got McDonald's at home. We got Mason Miller at home. It's Zach Fruit. He touches 99, sweeper, curve, changeup. McCray actually projected 355 plus grade pitches in the fastball, sweeper, and curve, but He's making his pro debut this year in high A, 25 strikeouts in 21 innings. And this past week, he made his one start, career high 5 innings, career high 7 strikeouts, just one walk in that outing. He's got a 51% ground ball rate. The FIP is actually half run lower at 2.45 than his ERA. I watch probably more Zach Fruit than any other starter in this organization, if I'm being honest. This kid is I'm falling in love with Zach Fruit. And I love the comments we get on Twitter too about the when he makes it to the majors, like the like the fruit stand in the stands, like all the different ideas. People are already loving the different things we could, the play on the fruit last name. It's fun.
Fruit Ninja, classic app. great choices. I love Aaron Estrada. He's one of my guys, short king. I'm going to go with Anderson De Los Santos, who is a guy in our top 50, but after a solid first game or two with Delmarva, he was pretty dreadful for a couple weeks there. But I mean, it's only 5 games, but in the past week or so, he batted 333. With a 733 OPS, 124 WRC plus, 0 ISO. So he was only hitting singles, but it was nice to see the contact there. 10% walk rate, 20% strikeout rate. Maybe this is the start of the breakout, bounce back Anderson De Los Santos season that we've kind of been predicting for a while now since last season ended. And my pitcher is a guy who was promoted to AAA over this past couple of days, Cade Stroud, who we've talked about a lot recently, that was John Muehly's guy a couple years ago, and it finally seems to be happening. 26 years old, so obviously not a spring chicken, but now that he's in AAA, he's one step away from the majors. The big thing with him was always the walks, and he only has one walk allowed so far this season, 10 and a third innings pitched, 11 strikeouts. Obviously, I think he's got that really fast fastball, high velocity fastball, can touch triple digits, but I feel like he's relying on it a lot less this year. And he has really nasty breaking stuff as well, and he's going to that more often. And maybe that was the key to unlock the success that some people thought was coming for the past few years now. But I think Cade Stroud, he could be a guy that makes the majors this year and maybe is a high octane arm to pair with Felix Bautista as soon as next year. Once Bautista's back on the mound.
Yeah, Stroud and Cameron Weston both earning recent promotions. Weston from Aberdeen to Bowie, and then Stroud from Bowie to Norfolk. Both of them well deserved. And I agree that Stroud right now is making a case to be a relief option later in the year. I'm going to start my hitter, Anthony Servideo, who had a really good series for Bowie against Erie last week. He appeared in 4 games and hit safely in all 4 of them. And his best game was actually on Saturday, when he went 3-for-4 with a home run. In fact, he homered in back-to-back games. So a good run for him. And then for my pitcher, I'm going with Braxton Bragg. We've talked about Delmarva's pitching staff a lot to this point in the season, but Bragg has not been mentioned to this point, I don't believe. And what's interesting about him is that his first outing of the year was really bad. 5 runs given up in an inning and a third, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, hit a batter, surrendered a home run. Since then, he has walked just 1 batter, has not given up a home run, and the strikeouts have been piling up along the way. He's fanned 23 batters in 14 and 2/3 innings pitched. And his start last week against Fayetteville, or his relief outing against Fayetteville last week, was one of his strongest to this point in the season. 4 solid innings, 5 strikeouts, no walks, just 1 hit allowed. He has now struck out 25 batters while walking just 3 through his first 16 innings of this year. And to give a little bit of background on Bragg for any listeners who might not be familiar with him, he was the Orioles' 8th round pick last year out of Dallas Baptist University. So keep an eye out to see what he does the rest of the way, because he is off to a very good start at Delmarva. And that does it for this week's episode. We will be back later this week with our live episode from Checker Spot Brewing. As a reminder, that will take place Saturday, May 11th, beginning at 2 p.m. If you have tickets to the Orioles Diamondbacks game, stop by ahead of time and watch us. If you don't have tickets to the game, come for the show and then stay afterwards, because Tucker Spot will have the game on. We'll have a little bit of a viewing party. Friend of the show, Connor Newcomb, the host of Locked On Orioles, is going to be joining us as a guest. We're also going to take questions from the audience. And, of course, we might announce more guests between now and Saturday. So keep an eye out on our social media channels, of which there are many, including Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, TikTok, and YouTube. You can also find us at Patreon and at Substack, OrielsOnTheVerge.substack.com. And as a reminder, over on Patreon this week, we're going to have our new monthly update to the Top 50 Prospects Countdown. And if you join Patreon and you join our Discord channels, you get a password to get a free beer during our live show on Saturday. So be sure to take advantage of that. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, presented by Bet Online and part of the Believe Podcast Network.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger. For the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.